Mary Mancini, please. Sunday night, and that means from high above beautiful Lake Osceola in downtown Jefferson Valley, New York, the John Mack Radio Show is on the air. Oh, good evening, this is John McMullen, John Mack to some. Welcome you to the 260th episode of Weekly John Mack Radio Show, which is also the first show of 2019. The recordings for the previous 259 shows may be found at www.johnmack13.com under the radio show tab. And John Mack is J-O-H-N-M-A-C. So that's www.johnmack13.com. In addition to the previous radio shows, you'll also find links to my online daily newsletter at my web home. The newsletter is a curation of 10 news articles from around the country and the world. Try it and subscribe. Only one email per day, and it's free. And once again, it's www.johnmack13.com. Fridays in the Hudson Valley should be aware that January 9th is the monthly poetry meeting of the MayorPAC Poetry Workshop held at 6:30 p.m. at the MayorPAC Library on 6 in MayorPAC. The next night, Thursday, January 10th, is the weekly meeting of the MayorPAC Writers Group, now in its 21st year at 6:30 p.m. in the same MayorPAC Library. More than 100 books have been published by writers from the group. People wishing more information may contact me at johnmack13@gmail.com. That's johnmack13@gmail.com. The next week, on January 13th, my guest will be poet Cheryl Rice, followed on January 20th by another poet, Sonia Greenfield. And January will be rounded out on the 27th by longtime New York television personality Jane Hansen. Now, to this week's show, as mentioned, the 260th, my guest is Yorktown, New York, town supervisor Thelen Delaney Gilbert. The Yorktown is the town in which I live, and I am honored to be the poet laureate of this 36,000 population town in Upper Westchester, New York. In that role, I see Lanny every other week when I read a poem or two at the town board meetings. Delaney was my guest about a year ago when he was beginning his initial term as town supervisor. I say his initial term because meaning that he had not been previously the supervisor, and not to indicate that he's guaranteed continuance in a position. He will be, in fact, facing re-election later this year. The listeners wishing to join Lanny and me on the air may do so by calling 646-716-9756. That's 646-716-9756. I generally hold whole called participation until near the end of my conversation with my guest. So let's get started. Welcome to the show for the second time, Lenny.
Thank you. Thank you. I feel right at home now. And it's a pleasure to be on the show and amongst such good company, listening to the types of guests that you will have in the future.
Thank you, sir. The last time around, we took considerable time going through your history, so we won't spend much time on it now, but for the sake of those that didn't hear the show, please recap your background, origins, school, employment, and how you came to Yorktown.
Sure, sure. I grew up in Queens, New York, and basically lived in the same house from first grade until, actually, while I was in law school, I was living with my folks after I came back from undergrad school. I went to the public school system, through the public school system, PS 173, Ryan Junior High School, 216, and then Jamaica High School. And from there, I went on to State University of New York up in Binghamton. And after that, I came home and went to Hofstra Law School. And at that point, I began a career in the court system in 1982 that extended just until the year that I won the election here in for town supervisor in November. As soon as I did, I retired after 35 years in the court system. I basically worked in the criminal justice system for those 35 years on the criminal division of Supreme Court. Although I was a court attorney referee, and the judge that I worked for, the singular judge for 28 years, ultimately at one point was the administrator of the courts, and we handled both the civil and the criminal divisions. That's basically what my background was. In 1991, as I indicated, I had gotten married in 1988, and in 91, I moved up to Yorktown, and I've been a resident of Yorktown ever since. Moved the family up here, and raised my family up here.
Do you remember what made you choose Yorktown rather than Somers, Yonkers, Mount Kisco?
Well, I'll tell you, I let my wife at the time do a lot of the footwork. She was terrific. She was very thorough. And we probably looked at about 20 homes in the Westchester area, and we were weighing the price of the homes, the taxes, the schools, obviously the school districts, because we knew we were going to be raising our children up here, and that was a key component. And we were very satisfied that actually Yorktown sort of checked off all the boxes, so to speak. We were very happy with the community. It wasn't too large. It wasn't too small in the terms of the three bears. It wasn't too big, wasn't too small. It was just right. So
didn't you also have friends in the area that worked in the court system also?
Did I have friends in the area? Yes, actually, Jim Martirano, who I don't know whether or not he's ever appeared on your show, but Jim Martirano was a councilman up here.
He's been a guest on the show, yeah.
Yeah, so, well, you know Jim's background. Jim and I worked in the Bronx court together for over 35 years. So we knew each other very well. When he heard I was looking to move my family up from Queens, he also, threw in a good word for Yorktown. And actually, he was the one that put me on the road to being involved, so hands-on involved in the town in terms of as soon as I moved up here, within probably a year, the town board that he was a member of back then appointed me to the conservation board, and I was on that board for almost 12 years, or maybe a little over 12 years, until I then was elected town judge. And at that point, I was asked to by Linda Cooper, who was the supervisor at the time. She thought that there were potential conflicts, being the town judge and being on an advisory board for the town, just in case, I guess, there were environmental cases brought before the court. I wasn't so sure that could have parsed that out, and also recused myself when I thought it was necessary, but in deference to her as the supervisor, I love doing the job on the conservation board, but in deference to her, I voluntarily removed myself from any potential conflict.
And one of these small world things, and it's 260 shows to date, I've had three Fordham College graduates. Two of them, Terry Dugan, who you may have met one of the luncheons, and Jim, graduated in the same year from Fordham. And the other one was your predecessor, Mike Grace, who went to Fordham. So three people, all good local roots here. How long were you a judge for, Lonnie?
I was the town judge from 2007, including the year of 2007, through 2011. So I was actually the judge for a term. I was appointed to fill a vacancy for judge when Jeff Cohn, who was the town judge, had gone up to county court. I filled his vacancy for a year and then was elected to sit for a four-year term the following 4 years. And my term ended in 2011. So it was a five-year term.
What made you choose to run for town supervisor in 2017?
Well, quite a number of factors came into play. The first was, as I said, I think if I had my druthers, I would have continued on as the town judge. But there was just as there has been a blue wave recently, there was a red wave back in 2011, sort of a backlash on Obamacare and the Obama election. And as a result, I didn't think that town court was going to be affected, but I believe it had something to do with it. And the electorate chose not to have me continue, which was, you know, fine. I felt I was doing a fine job. I, you know, not to pat myself on the back, but I know I had 35 years of experience in Bronx Supreme Courts, or at that time, 25 years. So, but with that said, it was time to leave the bench. And I really had no real desire to enter politics in any other fashion, except I started to see how things were happening in the town, things the way the politics was becoming. It was sort of the growing trend, as we saw, how it's become so tribal, and it was really starting to bother me. I'm a Kennedy Democrat at heart. And Kennedy's great quote is that there's no Republican way to do things, or there shouldn't be, or a Democratic way, but there's only the right way to do things. And that's my philosophy. And I was really upset with the way how the town had sort of become tribal and in the terms of politics. So I also had, unfortunately, a personal event that sort of kept me out away from the scenes for about a year and a half. I lost a son, and as a result, that actually ultimately became a motivating factor for me. I felt that using him as an inspiration to make things right in the town. I still have two sons in the high school, and I wanted to make sure that not just economic issues were dealt with in this town, but socioeconomic issues, issues with regard to drugs and overdoses and things like that. My son's class, of the 2009 class, lost 9 kids to both suicide or drug overdose.
And, wow, that's awful.
Yeah, it was. I mean, and so that was another motivating factor for me. Moving forward, I then ran in 2015, lost by 8 votes for a council seat, and still came up swinging, so to speak. I didn't give up at that point. And things, God works in mysterious ways, or things happen for a reason. And the following 2 years, I ran for supervisor, and I was successful. And I'm very happy because I truly believe I'm changing the tone of government in Yorktown, and I truly believe I'm accomplishing things. It's not a career for me. It's because, as I said, I retired from the court system. It's not a stepping stone for me. I'm doing this because of my love of the town.
Now, Yorktown, I believe, is a traditionally Republican town, isn't it?
You know, it had been for many, many years. Right now, the enrollment is very, very much divided in thirds. You have basically a third of the enrollment. There are 24,000 registered voters. There are approximately 8,000 Democrats, approximately 8,000 Republicans, and approximately 8,000 unaffiliated. And
okay.
there is a significant conservative sector as well of maybe 1,000 registered voters.
You defeated three-time incumbent Michael Grace, is no basketball buddy of mine. That must have been an uphill battle for you. To what do you attribute your victory?
I think there were many factors, and I choose not to harp on any kind of negative. I think some of the things that helped me win were the fact that I had name recognition. People knew me as the town judge. They heard my message that I wanted to sort of take the partisanship and the tribal nature of politics out of the local government. And I think that there was a backlash, truthfully, against the current president. I think that there continues to be a backlash against him, although there are obviously there's a core of supporters that I'm sure he still has in Yorktown and he has elsewhere. But I think it came down to also just people. One thing I'll tell you, I think there was during the course of the election was also this was the year that I won. There was an issue that came that was on the scenes about the Constitutional Convention. And you had a lot of people come out to vote on that regard. And I think the more people we get out to, or the more people that come out to vote, tends to help the Democratic candidates. Because in off years, typically Republicans seem to come out in numbers, in greater numbers than Democrats. But when you motivate the Democrats to come out, it sort of evens things out. My margin of victory was not all that great. It was a little less than 300 votes, but I think that's basically what happened.
You mentioned the tribalism. You came into office with a Democratic majority on the town board, while Mike in his last term had a Republican majority. Those unfamiliar with local politics normally think that the national party labels are irrelevant in local politics, but that seems to be the misconception, is it not?
I think it is. I mean, you know, and I wish it were. I mean, in reality, saying that politics don't come into play locally, but I can tell you, and it's upsetting to me on both levels. I can tell you, I've knocked on doors. That's one of the things I do when I campaign. I did it when I was the town judge, and I did it when I was the council candidate, and I did it when I was the supervisor candidate. But I knock on doors, and I don't care whether the household is Republican registration or Democratic registration, because I truly believe that I can stand on my own and verbalize and articulate why I think that an individual should vote for me. But I have experienced, I've knocked on doors where as I'm about to have a discussion, the person says, "What party are you with?" And I've had doors, on a Republican door where they've said, "Sorry, wrong party," and they've closed the door in my face. And I've,
wow.
But, and as much as that, I find that upsetting, you know, I obviously I won't argue with them. If that's their position, that's their position. Before the door is closed, I often say, "Don't you want to know about me before you make a judgment?" That's not always successful. Sometimes they keep the door open when I make that statement. But with that said, I know that I've gone to Democratic doors and I've been asked the same question. And when I say that I'm a Democrat, they say, "Oh, good." You know, and then they start, then they're very friendly with me. And so I assume that the Republican gets the same response that I do on the, other vein. So it, either way, I really, it's upsetting to me because I know that just as I feel that I'm not being heard, I'm sure the Republicans feel the same way. And that's unfortunate. But
what do you see as the difference between the parties at the local level? I know that two PATH supervisors have changed their registration and they've won on their new ticket. And I know that one of them lost in the Republican Party and then came on the board as the Democrat. I know that
I know that
the highway commissioners have been both parties at times. What are the policy differences between the parties?
There really are. Once it comes down to, like you say, working on budgets and everything like that, there may be an attempt to paint a broad brush that, for example, that Democrats are liberals. But I have my Democratic ideals, but I am still fiscally conservative. Each party has, it's funny, each party obviously has its left and its right and its center. And I truly believe if you really peel the orange or the onion down to its the core, the moderate or middle ground Republican has the same feelings and or ideas that the moderate or middle Democrat does. So I actually appeal to, I think, both sides of the aisle who are on the, in the middle. I know I do not appeal to those that are, strong Trump supporters. As a matter of fact, it was an ugly campaign against me and my my fellow Democrats. Here I am, I'm the former town judge. I've obviously been very concerned and worked very hard to, with regard to public safety and the prevailing, have justice prevail in our town for 5 years, the years that I worked. Yet when I was running, I don't know where they got it from. They twisted words that may have been said or whatever. And I say this as this was done on a statewide level by the Republican Party, and it trickled down into Yorktown. But they basically said I was going to create a sanctuary town, and I couldn't. And myself and my fellow candidates, the Democratic candidates, could not be trusted, and that the public safety of the town was in jeopardy if we won. It was obviously a a horrible scare tactic, and again, it reflects what was going on in the on the national scene.
They also sent out a mailing saying that you were the pawns or the puppets of a previously twice defeated candidate, one of the Democratic,
correct,
one of the Republican, and that seemed to be over the top. Why would anyone be a puppet of someone who's lost twice?
well, yeah, I mean it had no legs, there was nothing to it, and yet it was by associating me to someone who obviously had been defeated twice as being aligned with that individual, I think they tried to just, you know, cast dispersion on me, and you know, they figured if they could paint, they threw enough spaghetti or something on the wall, and something would stick. And in today's day of politics, that 10 second soundbite, and that whatever, whether it's alternative facts or false facts or whatever, sometimes it gets legs, and it's hard to combat.
So you won the election, have a month and a half transition, which seems from recent comments from both sides to not been the smoothest, and boom, you're in office with a lot of responsibility. With a year's hand hindsight, were you well prepared for what you faced, do you think?
I think what I was well prepared, not from that month and a half. I was well prepared having been a witness to the town and government for close to 20, 25 years, almost immediately, like I said, upon moving up here, being on the conservation board, you actually have your finger on the pulse of almost every development or every application that comes before the town board that has any kind of environmental impact. But as a result, I was savvy. I was knowledgeable to how the town board functioned. I served under Don Peters. Under Aaron Bach, under Linda Cooper, and I ran with Don Peters when I was the town judge. I ran a number of campaigns with different individuals, and I was very fortunate, quite frankly, to have as a running mate someone who had been the town clerk for 25 years, Alice Roker. And Alice has obviously a wealth of knowledge. So I feel there were so many things that put me in a good position. Yes, there's a learning curve. It's a learning curve of being the top executive or being the CEO or being the top executive in a new company. That, no question, was new. But in terms of me being ill-equipped or unprepared, I would say not. I also spent, out of the 35 years in the court system, at least 12 to 15 of those years in court administration. So I was very in running the entire Bronx Supreme Court, which is one of the busiest courts in the country.
And now you are faced with a re-election campaign. I think, by the way, that the two-year term for town supervisor are ludicrous, and even more so first-term supervisors. Do you get into office with a plan, begin to flesh it out while dealing with daily or weekly normal problems, and all of a sudden, boom, you have to run again.
That's true.
Isn't this frustrating, particularly when other members of the town board have four-year terms?
It is. But, I was told by my dad once years and years and years ago, who was my hero, but he, Lanny, you work with you play the cards you dealt with. And so I knew going in, obviously, that this was a two-year term. Yes, it's frustrating. Yes, it takes almost a year to sort of set your goals and make sure that there are a lot of mistakes to correct from prior administrations, at least that I found. And I believe, whether or not others 100% agree with me, that's their prerogative. But I believe that a lot of the important infrastructure and non-sexy type of needs of the town were never addressed because they weren't sexy for re-election purposes or popularity. And I'm in a unique position. I obviously care very much about getting reelected, wanting to do what's right for the town because I do feel I'm making a difference. But I am ready to meet those difficult issues. And if people see through the nonsense of what's said against me, and they're not happy with or they're not happy with the job I'm doing, then I can still look myself in the mirror knowing that I'm doing what I believe is best for the town. I'm listening to people. I'm opening up government to listen to people, but I'm also addressing certain needs. This town hall, highway garage went without permanent generators for many, many years. If you recall, the first 3 months that I was in office, I was hit with storm after storm after storm, and we lost power. I actually was working 19 straight days at one point with my executive assistant on the phone dealing with Con Edison and NYSEG. And yet there were stretches when town hall was without power, without computer, and I was trying to operate the town government through the emergency offices. I was in either the AACCC building, the Albert Capellini Community Center. I was there. I was at the police emergency center, and that's no way to have to run a town. And the highway garage was without a permanent generator. They were using actually a generator at one point that was, I think, dated back to World War II. So I purchased new generators and trying to bring the town back to where it should be. It was neglected. The can was kicked down the road for many, many years. It wasn't just Michael Grace and his prior administration. It dated back at least 10, 15 years of neglect.
I do hope, though, that whoever wins the next election, there'll be action by the new town board to do whatever is necessary to change the term for subsequent supervisors to 4 years. What would your feeling be on that?
The only thing that I understand in terms of why it is what it is if you get a supervisor who you're unhappy with, you feel just is completely not suited for the job, you don't have to wait for 4 years to vote them out. That's the only upside to the two-year term. The downside is all the things that you've already addressed, and I think so. On the whole, I would say yes. I think it would be better, maybe somehow. I don't know whether it could be worked out that way, but once an individual becomes supervisor and serves the first 4 years, then they may be subject to a two-year term after that. That's an interesting concept. I don't think I've seen that anywhere. But
I like it 4 and 4 as it goes along. What was the biggest surprise for you once you got into office and began work?
I really do believe it, that I was really sort of flabbergasted that there had been so little regard to taking care of significant issues that the town was facing. We're still facing issues of infrastructure, of the roadways. We were on a 32-year cycle, and it was reduced, but I think it was reduced again for political reasons, expediency. At the very end of Mr. Grace's term, you have a road. If you have a 32-year paving cycle, and the roads only last 18 to 20 years, What does that tell you about the state of your infrastructure?
Then you have trouble.
And that's just, yeah, and that's just, and we reduced it, and by me investing an additional 10% this year, you know, we hope to get bring down the it down to more almost to where it's where I think we're at 26 or 22 years now with an 18 year. We, you know, the goal is to get it down to whatever the lifespan of the roads are, so that at the end of the life of that road, the legitimate life of the road, you're ready to repave it. That's the absolute, you know, that's the goal. And I hope to ultimately, you know, push in that direction. But that's just on the surface. That's the easy stuff for people to see. We've got issues in terms of aging sewers, aging water lines. We had 50, well, as of the last 2 weeks in the year of 18, we had had 48 water main breaks in the town. And I think just in the last week and a half, we had an additional 6 or 7. So we were over 50 water main breaks this year. You know, a lot, you know, these are aging. These are pipes that have been in the ground for 50 years, 60 years. And they need to, you know, these issues need to be addressed. And I hope to do that. And I hope I'm given the opportunity to continue doing that. And people realize that, you know, these issues have to be addressed.
Yeah, they have to be. They have to know about them first, though. And I think those kids made a very good presentation on the water system at the last board meeting.
That's right. Yes,
speaking of the board meetings that I attend often become rather tedious. Now, both you and your predecessor are attorneys, perhaps better than non-attorneys in dealing with minutia. Do you think I'm correct in that assessment?
They can be tedious, but I think one of the things, as you know, what I did was I opened up both the work sessions and the town board meetings, which were always televised. The town board meetings were. I've opened up the work sessions to television, and quite frankly, if I bore people to death and watching, that means that, you know, I'm not doing anything that's overly controversial in terms of them being upset. I think that may be a good thing. But no, I don't intend to, you know, it's not an intentional act on my part, but these meetings do run long. We have a lot of issues that need to be addressed.
I mean that the content very often is because of understandable things that are important to people, you know, and sometimes to the audience, they're not as important as they are to the people who have a concern. And I'm just wondering whether attorneys, or you mentioned you're in the court system for years, that they're more used to handling this than the ordinary.
I would say so.
Yeah.
But you know what? There, to lump attorneys together as much as yes, we have
training
mindset of the way attorneys act, the variance in terms of the way while former supervisor and I are both attorneys and attorneys for many, many years, and he's practiced before me on what came before me when I was on the conservation board, and you know, he has his methodology and way of doing things. Sometimes we saw eye to eye and sometimes we didn't, just because we're attorneys doesn't, obviously that's the nature of the legal system, is you have proponents of on one side and proponents on the other.
In training, I didn't mean in the particular problem. I just meant that going through briefs and going through things. In addition to the town board public meetings, which I attend, there are town board work sessions, planning board meetings, other committees, meetings with county and state officials, and New York Town citizens and business. Can you give us an overview of your normal work week, if in fact there is such a thing?
There is no such thing. There, actually, my executive assistant helps me keep a calendar, and I try to obviously stick to it as best I can, and I do. And first of all, I maintain I have, and I think it's a little different. I think I've opened up town hall to where it's to a manner in which it hasn't been in a while. You can walk up the stairs into the steps of town hall up into my office. And if I am not in the middle of anything, I will invite you to sit down and either air grievances or tell me what you think is great about Yorktown, or just have a cup of coffee and shoot the breeze for a little while. I'm generally pretty busy. But with that said, there are days when I have things on my calendar and it goes pretty smoothly. There are days when I have very little on my calendar, but all of a sudden there are, not literally, but the fires jump up on different issues. We get a water main break, and it's on a Friday afternoon, and it's a question of whether or not, we have the appropriate resources. It's not a good example, because I have to tell you that our highway and water people are always on top of it. But I'm just trying to say that things come up, and yes, all of a sudden I have a need to have an emergency meeting with the president of NYSIG, or I have to go up to, we had an issue recently with one of the applications, the Roma building, and where we created or asked for a mini master plan. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, it was suggested by John Tegeter, our planning person, that let's go up and let's talk to the DOT about what we can do about that trap, how they can address it, or what we should be looking at in addressing that intersection, which is a vital intersection in the town. So I am constantly in and out of meetings. Dealing with, like I said, flash issues, so to speak.
During the last month, you and Town Clerk Diana Cross participated in the Christmas food and toy distribution at the community food pantry. You were also Santa Claus in the parade, and you had to go to other holiday functions. Are there many of these functions like this during the year that take your attention?
There are. I actually happen to love this time of year, because there is somewhat, obviously I'm on call and I'm ready to go on any issue that comes up. But generally, things tend to slow down towards the holiday season. People go away on vacation. People are spending time with their family. When things sort of slow down, it's nice then to the wonderful. I mean, it was a wonderful experience. I had never done it before. I was actually probably the first Jewish Santa Claus for the town of Yorktown, and I don't let any of the kids know that. But I had a wonderful experience, and just seeing the light in the eyes of these, especially the 5, 6, 7, 8-year-olds yelling out, "Santa, Santa," as, we went down the parade route, and feeling bad that I wasn't getting to wave at all of them. I had to wave to one side of the street and then the other. But it was just a fun part of the job, and it's, I loved it. And but yes, there are, during the course of the year, there are obligations that I say obligations, but they're the nice part of the job. I try to make as many Eagle Scout courts of honor that I can. Vishnu does that, and so does Tommy Diana and Ed Lackerman. And I think it's important for the kids to see their town leaders at these functions and taking interest in what they've done, and take so that they can take pride in what they've done, and that we're, in which they well should do that. So we have, you have an obligation to, I think, aside from your regular day-to-day get the job done, it's part of the job is to be available to the public for grand openings of stores and things like that, ribbon cuttings and all those kind of obligations. And it is trying because there obviously most of these, a lot of these things are done on the weekends, and I have my own family and extended family, and sometimes I've had to sacrifice going to my own family's events or extended family's events because I had town obligations. But I understand the requirement and the need, and again, I take great satisfaction in doing it, ultimately.
For the audience unfamiliar with our town, Yorktown is a collection of hamlets, each with small shopping areas, one of which has a big mall. There's no large town center with suburbs around it. What particular problems does such a layout present?
Well, it's a very good question in terms of, and that's one of the things that I'm addressing, at least from the business standpoint. You know, everyone sort of, even though what you say is true, people tend to center on the heights in terms of the fact that there are empty stores and things need to be addressed. And if you address the heights, you've cured the problem or the issues. Well, that's not true. And like I'll give you a perfect example is anyone who's driven through this town over the years, and they've driven through Main Street and East Main Street and the Shrub Oak area, and they've gone to that Shrub Oak Acme, or formerly A&P, they've noticed that there's been an empty auto tire place that's been boarded up for as many years as the empty food emporium. And it's just as important for me to try to work and solve the issues with regard to that area as it is in the Heights section, even though the Heights section, like I said, gets more traffic. So I guess I'm trying to get at is that I'm not a supervisor that focuses on any one particular hamlet. Actually, I've been praised by some people, and it's not really necessary to be praised, but I've been told that I'm one of the few who I shop in almost each of the hamlets. I'm all over the place in the town. And because I think that I see the need and the importance of considering, you know, realizing that this is one town that needs to be it has to be thought of in that regard. Yes.
The traffic problem around the Roma building plans. It looks like they're going to get the same thing. What I read in a paper about the plans or the petition to reset up the area in Mohegan Lake by CVS, that people are concerned that will cause tremendous traffic problems there.
Yes and no. I mean, you're absolutely right. There are people who are concerned about it, but the only additional venture that just recently sparked this issue was the rezoning of a property which had already been zoned for a bank. So I really don't think that the difference in the traffic with the new rezone is going to affect that traffic much more significantly than what has been approved by past boards. So it really was not a situation where we really had much control in that particular instance on denying the change of zone to allow for some, you know, a retail or a food establishment. I don't
okay.
think what we're doing is you know, we gave us. I don't think we had much leeway at that on that particular project.
If you had to review the past year, what accomplishments are you the most proud of?
Addressing the infrastructure. Again, that's been long neglected. Putting generators in the roof. I mean, generators in the in the town hall and the highway garage. Addressing. Speaking with the Margaret, who is the head of our building division, our you know department head, asking her what the needs were that she saw in the town. She pointed and had a study done of five roofs that need to be fixed or addressed at a cost of approximately $1.2 million over the next year, two or three. Also a new boiler that was installed in the again the community center, and really, like I said, addressing all this infrastructure work that has been neglected over the years. That's the second is the tone I think I'm setting as a former judge, and I think the town board meetings are a heck of a lot different if you tune in on them or if you sit in on them than they were a year, two, three, 4 years ago. I think you have a town board that listens to whether you take everyone's opinion or you utilize, you know, you're not going to be able to please everybody, but as long as everyone has his voice is heard, I think that's an important aspect. My opening up the meetings by televising all the meetings, I think I feel proud to have done that. And basically meeting as many of my campaign pledges that I possibly could have. The one that's recently, as you know, I was under attack a little bit, was the not filling the vacant stores. But I am working on, I've set up a business committee that has identified 12 areas that we can address, three of which may be low-hanging fruit, so to speak, that we may be able to really start to move forward and accomplish some of the and success that I'm hoping to achieve.
What disappointments have you had?
Well, again, I truly believe, as much as I've tried to change the tone of the local government, and I'm not necessarily the two board members that sit with me, I think they've in most part attempted to cooperate, but I think that there is an underlying dissatisfaction with those that I defeated and with those that were the prior the prior party and the that was in power, and they wanted to come back, and I think rather than wish me well and say, let's roll up our sleeves and work. There's a new government in town. I didn't get that kind of cooperation. I don't believe this. And they're going to, they would criticize me saying that I'm too thin-skinned or whatever. And I have been accused of that by them. And I think that, that's not accurate. I just wish that we had a more of a cooperative situation. So that's my disappointment, that as much as I think I've changed the tone, I still feel that there is a uphill battle.
Can you articulate an overall vision that you have for the town?
I do. I think that there are certain things that the town can definitely, that's part of, again, this commission that I've set up. You know, the part of the commission's goals, or at least its charge, is to really sort of analyze the town, what its assets are, what its liabilities are, what what is realistic for the town to bring in and generate. You know, you hear people all over the town say, oh, we should have a Trader Joe's in Yorktown. Well, you know what? I'd love for there to be a Trader Joe's too, but Trader Joe's has to want to come to Yorktown. And what we need to do if we're a town serious about trying to get a Trader Joe's is to do an analysis, a self-analysis, and a realistic self-analysis. And are we a town that Trader Joe's should be interested in? And do an analysis, do a marketing, try to market the town, and then go to Trader Joe's or another organization and basically say, this is what we have to offer. Look, you have to be realistic. We're not, you know, Peekskill has shown, had many, many years where it was really down in the dumps. But recently it's gotten it's insurgent. And what is the reason for the influx or of money and ideas of investment? Well, first of all, it's on a train line. Second of all, it's on a waterfront. These are all things that are attractive to people that those are things we don't have. And we have to be realistic about that. But what do we have? We have great schools. We can bring in, we have trailways. We have farms. We have open space. We have, and we do have, now we brought in, we have the international school that's coming up off of Stony Street. We're going to have, I think, eventually a demand or a need for a hotel in the town. There hasn't been one for years and years. And I think we can market the town in such a regard that we can convince maybe a hotel chain to come into the town. And if that does, I think, again, it's a win-win for the town. It's a win-win for the local catering halls. It's a win-win for restaurants. It's, it becomes a symbiotic reaction or a interaction.
Yeah, it's a...
My vision is try to stimulate and how to, but be realistic in how to stimulate the growth.
I was sitting near in the audience at the last town board public meeting before he took office, and when a bit of the brouhaha broke out on the stage, I slipped you a note asking if you were sure that you still wanted this job. You laughed and said yes, but obviously you still do want this job. That's good.
Yes.
But what do you hope to accomplish both this year and the possible second term, other than what we've already talked about? Are there any particular projects or anything?
Yes. Aside from all the economic issues and things like that, one of the things I ran on and one of the things I want to address, and obviously I told you about my personal tragedy and the tragedy with the kids in the town, and that's to try to address the opioid crisis and the drug use and any of those issues. I think what was neglected, there was some very good work done in terms of law enforcement and in terms of understanding access to the drugs, in terms of even former Senator Murphy passing legislation to reduce access to a significant the over-prescription of opioids and things like that. What wasn't addressed, and I intend to try to move forward with, is trying to address the mental health aspect of why kids or adults turn to drugs, whether that's being done as self-medicating because they have an underlying depression or other issues. And I believe that hasn't been sufficiently addressed locally. It has been addressed on the national level and on the county level. And to that degree, one of the things I initially thought is I would create a committee similar to what I did for the business organization. But I think I've rethought a little bit, having spoken to some experts in the area. And I think what I will try to do is meet with groups that are already existing and ask them how the town can partner with them or can help them rather than trying to reinvent the wheel.
It seems to me there were the two Kmart locations in the town now, one near me and one over in the Heights, and the urgent cares that seem to be another the block that you ought to have the medical resources to drag into any kind of a plan. I mean, there seem to be doctors all over the place now.
You know what? As the former judge, if one of the defects or the imperfection or the imperfect part of our system right now, which needs to be changed or addressed, is I used to, when I found an individual in need of either crisis counseling or crisis intervention, I would send them down to the emergency. All we had really were emergency rooms down in Valhalla or Northern Westchester Hospital. And very, very often the individuals were brought in, looked at, kept for about 12 hours and then released, and never really addressed those issues or did the referrals to where they needed to be referred to. That's a key. And in the years that I worked in the court system, I helped create a drug and mental health part. And it's the referrals and the attempt to get mandatory treatment, which is so crucial. And you can utilize the courts because the courts have it. It's a carrot and stick approach. The courts do have, if there are criminal charges, then there aren't always criminal charges. But when there are, the court has the ability to use the carrot and stick approach to basically offer assistance and offer a reduced sentence if an individual agrees to treatment or, you know, and often that really is helpful.
Okay. We've covered a lot of bases tonight. What else would you like the audience to know about Edelyn Gilbert?
Well, that I really care. Like I said, I'm not doing this for a career. I mean, I am. As long as they want to keep me in the position, it's a career in that regard. But it's not. I did my 35 years down in Bronx Supreme Court, so I feel like my actual first career, I'm satisfied with and with the kind of work that I did over those years. Now this is a second career for me. I mean, there are many of friends who say to me, "You should be, even though you're only 62, you did 35 years. You could be, enjoying your retirement on the beach or having a pina colada somewhere." But you know what? I'm finding this work so fulfilling, and like I said, so satisfying, in that I really feel I'm making a difference in the town. I'm not ready to hang up the cleat, so to speak. So that's what people should know about me, that I'm ready to continue and work hard and do what I need to do to make the town thrive rather than just exist.
That's good. That's good. That's a good wrap. Alani, thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure for the second time.
Thank you, John. I appreciate the fact that you make it available for me to at least communicate to as many people as I can and let them know who I am and what I stand for.
Once again, thank you. Send any comments or questions to me about the show to johnmack13@gmail.com, and be sure to join us the next week at the same time for a discussion with Pope Cheryl Rice. And as they used to say in the old neighborhood, see ya, or as Howie Rose used to say, if the Mets win and there weren't too many the last year, put it in the book.
Put it
so
in the book.
Let's go off with the Eagles. Amazon, play Peaceful Easy Feeling.
Peaceful Easy Feeling from your library, starting now on Amazon Music.
against your skin so brown. And I wanna sleep with you in the desert tonight, with a billion stars all around. 'Cause I got a
peaceful, easy feeling. Well, good night, everybody. Thank you. Oh.